I actually ended up ETSing out of the Army within like weeks of the stop loss back then. And I ended up just going into the inactive ready reserves, the IRR. And I was out for about 2 years. And then I'll never forget the day. This is my wife. She came up from the mailbox and she was like crying. I was like, what's going on? I mean, it's just the mail, right? And it was an old-timey Western Union mailgram. And it had orders on it saying, "Hey, guess what? Your days of being a civilian are over. You have to report to Fort Benning at this time and this date for an unknown period of time."
I'm Joe C. Mandel, and this is Raven Conversations. And today I'm joined by First Sergeant Dan Massey, Broadsword. Is that the company's name?
That is the company's name.
Awesome. I usually call it just Bravo, but we're going to call it Broadsword because I know you really love the name of it. Company, 1st Battalion, 161st Infantry. You are the first sergeant there at the out in the Tri-Cities.
Correct.
Yeah. He's here today to kind of share his Guard story, kind of snippets of his career. He's kind of in the last throes of a very long Guard career, and just share some of his knowledge and wisdom about being in the infantry. So thanks for coming on.
Hey, yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So intro and background yourself.
All right. So I joined in 2000, so it makes it super easy for me to figure out how many years I've been in.
Yeah.
So we're still in 25. So it's 25. Roughly around 25 years. I was active duty. I was here on Fort Lewis. And I was in 520 and I got my first Army experience there. And then, you know, the 9/11, all that stuff happened. I actually ended up ETSing out of the Army, within like weeks of the stop loss, back then. And I ended up just going into the inactive ready reserves, the IRR. And I was out for about 2 years and then I'll never forget the day. This is my wife. She came up from the mailbox and she was like crying. I was like, what's going on? I mean, it's just the mail, right? And it was an old timey Western Union mailgram, and it had orders on it saying, "Hey, guess what? Your days of being a civilian are over. You have to report to Fort Benning at this time and this date for an unknown period of time."
Oh,
and I was like, okay. So I ended up I answered the call and I got. I went through the whole IRR process, which was it was a lengthy one because none of your time starts until you get associated with a unit. And so this was just waiting and waiting, and went to Fort Benning, and we were just, you know, at a time we all figured it out. It was A to M was the group, and all of us were E4s.
Okay.
And, yeah. So we figured that out, you know, pretty quickly. We're like, oh, okay, well, that's how we got
that's
selected.
That's how they figured out who to
yeah,
put on this.
It was just alphabetical by last name. And then, we were there. I want to say it was like a couple of months. It was a while. And then we got attached to Wisconsin Army National Guard. And that was my first experience with the Guard. And you know, obviously it's not associated with the state or anything like that. And, we were at, you know, reserves, your needs of the Army. They were the ones who needed folks. They were getting mobilized. And so we got attached and I got attached to, I think there's 37th Brigade, at the time. I'm sure there's still that, but, yeah, we ended up mobilizing at that point. And now my time started ticking. And this is, you know, we're already probably like 6 months in, and it was an 18-month tour with a, you know, with a 6-month mob. So I didn't get to see home for a long time from the day that I started, you know, the whole IRR process until the day I got back. But what I did do on that mobilization was I went from E4 because I already had at the time PLDC, which is going to date me pretty well. I had the school done, and I was when I was active duty, you're waiting on points, and I just didn't have it. And but you know, they during wartime they made you know, they made it easier to promote, and all I had to do really was just show up, and I got pinned my E5 right then and there. We passed PT test, and I got pinned my E5, and I was like, oh, well, you know, that was pretty easy.
Yeah.
And then since I had school, and I ended up getting my time and grade while I was mobilized, I went from E4 to E6 on that one tour. And then since I joined, like since I, you know, I basically got caught up with my peers as if I never left, I was like, well, you know, I'm going to just stay in. And so when I got back from that mobilization with Wisconsin, I joined the Washington Guard because I didn't want it to go to waste.
Yeah.
And you know what Washington did? They sent me right back to Iraq. Went with,
with the 81st Brigade.
Yeah, went with the 81st Brigade. And I was like, all right, cool, Washington Guard. And they're like, hey, guess what? You're getting alerted. I was like, oh, well, all right. And so I went back again. That was 08-09. That was a good time, too. I was actually it was with 303rd Cav at the time. And then, yeah, ever since then, I just stayed part of Washington. I wasn't always AGR. I did a different traditional, and then I did some ADOS time, and then ended up being an AGR.
Yeah, so explain, like, the IRR piece, because I think that's always kind of a misnomer, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people get into IRR, and they think, well, I'm just done. I'm not in the, military anymore.
No, it can happen.
But it sounds like, yeah, you were the person who was, like, you're full bore, thinking, well, I'm kind of out.
Yep, you were in what was called Fort Living Room. And I was living my best life. I was trying to be a civilian again, and yet, nope, the Army said not anymore. And actually, it was a blessing in disguise, right? So, when you get out, you end up realizing what you had, and you end up. I took it for granted. You know, granted, there was real poopy days during my time as active duty, but then, you know, you miss the guys, you miss the camaraderie, and it was one of my big regrets. What really got me though was because I missed that deployment with those guys. And then they went. They were, the first push when the Strikers were just coming. They were like brand new because this is 2002, 2003, mm-hmm. And yeah, those guys, all my buddies started. You know, I started losing buddies like real fast, and I felt horrible. Another reason why I was like I had no problems with going back from the IRR or getting recalled and going back in. Was, you know, I kind of had that like remorse that I wanted to like, well, it's like, you know, I gotta make up for that loss. And it never ended up, filling that hole. It was just, you know, big regret. But now, like I said, it was kind of like a blessing in disguise.
Yeah. So it sounds like you kind of, your first kind of experience with the Guard was the Wisconsin Guard. How'd you learn about the Guard though?
This is going to sound horrible, but like, you know, as an active duty guy, I had no reference of the National Guard other than what was being told to me. And, you know, the active duty guys, they had, you know, they would spin their version of it. And it's like, yeah, you know, they're a bunch of has-beens and, you know, all of them are old and all of them are overweight. And, you know, that was the image I had in my brain. And then when I got with Wisconsin Guard, I was like, oh, these guys, they're not at all that bad. They were, you know, everybody's got their issues, but they were actually a pretty good group to deploy with. I didn't have any problems with them. Now there's other like super jaded IRR guys that just wanted to be those, they didn't want to play.
Yeah.
But I did my best to work with them, and they actually were the ones that helped me get my E6 because it basically turned out because I wasn't part of their guard. I was in the reserve component. All they had to do was basically send a memo that I met time and grade, time and service. And it was just a HRC St. Louis, and I got like some colonel or somebody just signed it off, and I got promoted.
Yeah,
they were the ones that helped me through that. But yeah, I didn't have a lot of like long term association with the Guard until then. And then I think it was those guys that actually convinced me to join the Guard, like in Washington State. They're like, you know, the Guard, they were kind of hyping it up to, you get to control your life a little bit more within the Guard, which is 100% true. Because, you know, active duty, if I had stayed active duty, Lord knows where I could have been.
Yeah, because you guys were stationed here, right, when you got out?
Yeah.
Or off active duty.
I was stationed here, but I was a low grade, you know, once you, like, make it E6 in the active duty, man, you're PCS into Lord knows where. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I did my midlife crisis, and I went to Ranger school. And if I was in active duty, I 100% would go back to one of the RTBs.
And that was another thing I was going to bring up. You went to first question, kind of to backtrack. Why the infantry? What did you like about the infantry when you first got in? Or what was the thing that drove you over there?
There's a long influence to this. And this guy, I guess, you know, it's kind of going back to I grew up in the 80s. I was also a latchkey kid. And I watched a lot of movies that I definitely should not have watched when I was as young as I was.
Goonies?
No. I remember being traumatized by RoboCop, the first one.
Yep.
And I was probably like 5 or 6 years old.
I was probably there too, yeah.
I was like, little traumatized. Like, yeah, it was just sheer blood, violence, and one of my most inspirational movie that really kind of shifted me towards going infantry was the movie Platoon, you know, with your old Willem Dafoe and Tom Berenger. And, if you watch it now, like, you know, when I was a kid, I was just like, hey, cool, violence, helicopters, and a lot of shooting. It's like, that's, you know, that's the 80s kids. It's what we all liked. We like Arnold Schwarzenegger movies and all the action.
Chuck Norris.
Yeah, Chuck Norris. Oh, he's still a legend. I'm glad he's holding strong. But yeah, it was that was a big influence, and I always knew I was going to be in some sort of combat arms, and I always kind of knew I was going to join some at some point. It wasn't much thought when I ended up joining. A buddy of mine was just like, hey, do you want to join? And I was just like, yeah, let's do it. It's like, I got nothing going on. I think it was 20 when we actually did it, and I never looked back ever since then. But yeah, I always knew I was going to be infantry. Basically inspired by 80s action films.
Nice. That is 100%.
Why not?
The last action hero.
I don't have like a long like history of like, you know, my family's like, yeah, my dad was it. No, my dad, he worked. Actually, I mean, he was, he always wanted me to be in the Air Force. That he actually was working for Howard Hughes way back in the day. And then he ended up going on the railroad and then became a salesman for textbooks. But he wanted me really to be in the Air Force. So as a typical kid to defy my father, I was like, well, no, it's Army all the way. Willem Dafoe, I'm gonna be like that guy. Hopefully not get shot up like he did, but you know, that was the path I was definitely gonna go down.
So you kind of already mentioned it, you were a late in life Ranger school graduate.
Yes.
So explain that story, because I think it was only a few years ago you graduated from Ranger school.
Yeah, class 323. I didn't start. Now I did what I call the extended stay version. And I remember it was actually Chaplain Sanders interviewed me right after, and I was kind of oblivious to what podcasts were at the time, and he's like, yeah, you know, I had my conspiracy theory of being a recycle, and now it was at the time I thought they were testing my grit. No, 100%, it was a petty recycle. They probably saw me and they're like, bro, you need to take a knee. Like, I look like Skeletor, and I was, you know, I was trying, but they didn't want to, like, you know, kill me. So they let me, they recycled me. Again, this is still a conspiracy theory. I'm not really sure. I kind of went, going back to that original story where I had that like deep regret of not deploying. I saw my career kind of coming to a close, and I was like, you know, I can't do this forever. The military isn't going to be like my final chapter in life, but I didn't want to leave it with any more regrets. So I ended up, at the time, I'd been married for, been married to the same girl since I was a PFC.
Okay.
Yeah. Mrs. Massey. She's Mama Massey, as a lot of folks know her by, but Renee, she's been, the rock behind everything. And kids are kind of older, and I was like, you know, it was Colonel Cooper was the battalion commander, and obviously a huge proponent of, you know, Ranger School, and a lot of the infantry guys are huge proponents of making sure we go there. And I knew I was a senior leader. I was like, you know what better way to inspire some of the other guys to be like, you know, if the old man can do it, anybody can do it. And that's true. There's really a fear of failure as a, you know, but I was like, at this point in my career, I got to at least try.
Yeah.
But really my biggest fear was injury, because, you know, I am of course at an advanced age and my relative risk for injury.
And you even said like, there's no regrets.
No, definitely not. Like even if I like couldn't have made it no matter what, like I wasn't going to be a quitter. I always make the, you know, that's kind of jokingly say I'm too dumb to quit, which kind of is true. I was going to put it on their terms. Like, no, they would be the ones to have to kick me out. Or again, you know, be the latter, which would be the injury, which was I was, and it wouldn't take much. You know, it wouldn't be like a cool story. And I was like this close to throwing out my back just because the bird came in and I was like, oh, let's just do this real quick. Because I had a very deliberate way of putting on these rucksacks.
Just like throw it up there.
No, that's how the kids did it. No, old man would like lay down like a turtle and kind of just roll over. But the bird was coming in and it was like, crap, we got to do this fast. And I threw that pack on and I saw the lightning strike of pain hit me in the spine. And I was like, oh no, it's like, this is it, like this. But fortunately I just kind of walked it off and got on the bird, and I don't remember much of it. When you're in the FTXs, you kind of remember it in bits and flashes. But yeah, I made it through and, I was very proud of myself, but also, you know, I was really just kind of hoping to inspire other folks to be like, you know, it's there is a spookiness to it, but it's not as bad as you think it is. It sucks. You have to be prepared for, yes, there's going to be poopy days, but you know, it's a cool experience. One of the best Army adventures you could probably go on for doing all the cool things. You know, I never rode an Osprey before, but when you're in Florida phase, that's all you're flying in, and they're super loud and it's questionable mechanics.
Yeah,
questionable. But at the time, I was like, "Hey, man, it's a place to sleep." So, anyways, I would always. I'm still a huge proponent of it, and I also learned a lot of, you know, because I was going in there not from, you know, one of the kids who were, you know, a lot of these kids are like 25. Some of them, this is like their first experience. I was taken back with kind of the training perspective of it, and it inspired me to kind of like, oh man, we can do a lot better with the way that those guys run their training and how they do all the injects and everything. It was well rehearsed, well designed, and well executed. You can tell they've been doing it for a while. Mm-hmm. But I brought a little bit of that back to how we kind of institute some of the training and what I trying to get these senior NCOs to think about when they're planning their own training. It's like, listen, yes, you guys can ask for, you know, simulators and, you know, the pyrotechnics and stuff like that, or the pyro. And it's okay. Just ask for it. The worst they can say is no.
Yeah. What's the worst they're going to say?
Yeah. Cause they woke us up with pyro every day. It was Artie Sims, man. Just that was our wake up call. And, I was like, you know what? I kind of want to do that to my guys.
Yeah. So you're kind of, it's interesting that you say, like, you know, late in life, you know, guy who goes through Ranger school, it kind of feels like, you know, at the 20-year mark, a lot of people are like, hey, I'm just kind of wrapping this up. I'm getting ready. And you're like, at the 20-year mark, what's the regret here? I'm
going to
retire.
It's
not going to pay me any less.
When I went, I didn't know at that time if I was going to retire or not. I was just like, I knew it was coming to a close at some point. I didn't have like the final, like, this is going to happen. I didn't want to have any regrets at all. And, I've definitely gotten a lot out of this military. This probably is one of your points too. And I always tell everybody this too, like, especially if they're in my command or if I'm part of their leadership, structure, I always tell everybody, don't get out of the Army without a minimum of a master's degree. It's free, for crying out loud. Just get it done. There's too much money like getting wasted right now that nobody's taking advantage of. And then the other thing that they're always going to come back with was, I don't have time. It's like, you do. You just have to sacrifice something. And it's usually going to be sleep. Trust me, I'm used to sacrificing sleep. If you have kids, you've already done it. Yeah. And I know a couple of guys that I've definitely helped influence to get through it. And this is something I learned back when I did my bachelor's degree was I did exercise science. And they called this thing called the SED principle, which is specific adaptations to imposed demands. Meaning, if you just sign up for college now, you will just adapt to it.
Yep.
You're going to figure it out. There's no right time to do it. It's just like starting a family. There's no right time to do it. You just got to do it. Do it before you're, you know, don't do it as late as me.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Do it younger.
You were absolutely correct. I mean, I didn't get my master's degree until I want to say I was late 30s. We had our daughter was real small.
Yeah.
And it was exactly that. It's, when did I do homework? after she went to bed, and that's when I did it.
But it was doable, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't the end of the world. But there's a lot of folks out there, I think, that just wait for that, like, perfect time. The perfect time is never going to happen. The perfect time is now. It's free. Get it done. And I mean, if you want to go all the way to a doctorate, just go for it. You know, I don't know. I'm pretty sure they'll pay up to a master's. I don't know if they'll pay up to, like, at that point, you got to GI bill it, most GI likely.
Bill. Yeah.
But still, it's like, get a master's degree. It was tough. I just never stopped. When I did the bachelor's degree, I was just kind of like, well, I knew it. If I would have taken my year off, I would have never have gone back.
Yeah.
So I was just, nope, I'm going to just do it. And the school I went to, which was Concordia St. Paul out of Minnesota, and they also offered a $2,000 alumni grant. And guess what happened with that $2,000?
It was
real. I got it back because the TA paid for it. And they just like, well, here's an overage. And so I got paid $2,000 just to go to school.
Yeah.
Because it was a grant.
Yeah. You're absolutely correct. When I went through my bachelor's degree, I had the ROTC scholarship, GI Bill, tuition assistance. All that money came back to me.
Yeah.
So then some of that money actually ended up going back towards a master's degree later in life. So it actually works out really well.
Yeah.
And you're always eligible for other things down the road too, which is fantastic.
Yep, exactly. And trust me, at this point now, when I'm looking at, you know, because I didn't have this all thought out. When I was doing it, I just knew that I was like, I want to do this because at the time it was more for like career development. I want to look appealing to the board. I want to do everything I can to make myself above my peers, right? But now I'm really glad I did, because now I'm getting close, you know, to the end, I've just so everyone knows, I am retiring. This is my formal announcement.
if they haven't figured it out yet.
But now I'm really glad that I did it, because I'm super marketable, and also being in operations too. If you look at Army operations, if you get it up there, and it's the equivalent of project management. We see things from cradle to grave, whether it be a simple tasking order or a mobilization. You know, we went to Thailand. That was from cradle to grave. That's a project. Mm-hmm. You can associate the two, and that's another thing I'm capitalizing now.
Yep.
Is I'm just grinding out all the credentialing assistance.
Yep.
So, and also the Lean Six Sigma stuff.
Yep.
I just started that too. So, and all these things are just, you know, they are resume boosters. Whether or not I'm going to actually do any of these things, but I know that I'm opening up doors every time I'm doing one of these little certifications or credentials.
Yeah. So that kind of brings me, so this is on your LinkedIn, and those on LinkedIn can find Daniel Massey,
yes.
MBA. Fantastic. You're very active on there. I love your posts.
Yeah, I've definitely shifted towards, like, you know, it's all, I'm boosting up my company right now.
Yeah. So it's like a catch line or whatever, the thing, like the little
blurb up there. Yeah.
It's drug and alcohol free veteran who has the remarkable ability to consistently show up on time.
Yeah.
I think you hit the point
yes.
so well there, is that it's the ability to consistently show up on time and being drug and alcohol free.
Yeah.
Most employers are like, that tells me about that guy right there.
That little tagline has gotten me more like people to reach out to me. And I did it as a joke at first. And I remember where it came from. And I was telling a kid, he was struggling with finding a job. And I was like, dude, go to any job shack at a construction site and say you're a drug-free veteran who will show up on time. They will give you a tool belt and a hammer, and they'll have you working that day. And I was giving this advice to other folks, and I was like, you know what? I mean, that's actually makes sense. So I ended up making it my silly tagline. But it evolved. I didn't always say it, you know, because I have recently given up. I never did drugs, so that one's a given. Like, but I struggled with alcohol, just like a lot of other folks, and I ended up just kind of giving it up. And I've been over at this point over a year completely sober, so I'm a total square right now. And it did kind of suck at first, but it is doable. It's one of those things that I want when I retire. I want to have a high quality of life, and I want to be able to enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to, because I'm I'm pretty sure you've seen it. You're no spring chicken in the Army either, where you see some guys retire and they deteriorate like rapidly. And usually it's because they drink too much and they eat too much and they're not staying active. And then, 5 years later, like, man, I'm going to another funeral, or a guy drinks himself to death, which is, a friend of mine recently done. And it's like, I can't do that. I don't want to be that guy. So I ended up quitting drinking. I ended up adding it to that tagline, and then just kind of expanded it. But also, I want to keep it short too, because there is a little comic. It shows you that yes, I'm reliable, but also I do like to have fun a little bit, and I do like to joke around.
Yeah. So a couple of things that also you're a big part of the Highlander Association.
Yes.
So for those that don't know, the Highlander Association is a 501c3 that supports the 1st Battalion,
yep,
161st Infantry.
Kind of
talk about
us.
Your role and what you do.
So, myself and Major Botten have been kind of the main drivers of that. Major Botten, 100%, is he's the team leader of that whole thing, and he is the one who fought to get it the official recognition of being a 501c. And then battled the IRS, which wasn't an easy deal, and it was a lengthy process. So I definitely don't want to take any of his credit. It's 100% him, but I've definitely helped see this thing through, and kind of more of the planning committee for like the Highlander Ball. We're going this weekend. We're going to the Calgary version of the Highlander Ball. So a lot of us are heading up there to go, and some of those things, like give the gifts that we mm-hmm. they give, and also. One of the biggest benefits is when you have the 501c, we've had a lot of other organizations that sometimes they struggle actually to find organizations to give money to. And we partnered with several other nonprofits and have helped, not just our own, but other soldiers as well. I know we've given out a couple of, grants here and there. Some kids are struggling, to pay whatever rent or their groceries or something like that. It's nice to have, and it's also nice to know that it's not just like some of the units do the slush fund, which is highly ill-regulated.
Yeah.
But this one's very regulated, and it is a legit 501c. And I'm always proud to be part of that. And I have a potential hope that when I do retire, I don't want to. I know, again, like kind of what I was talking about with the regret thing, I know when I do retire, I want to still be kind of affiliated, but I don't want to just like walk away and be like, break the wrist, I'm done. And I was hoping that I can take the Highlander Association on, because, Major Botten's not going to be there forever. Folks are going to move on, but I'm planning on staying in Spokane for quite some time. My kids are in school, and we'll probably see both kids through school, and my little boy's in fifth grade right now, so he'll go through school, and then maybe we'll stay there, but I don't know. But at least I got time. I got some consistency within the area, and there's potential that I can just take it on as a retiree and assist and kind of like, obviously there's still they're, because it's part of the Highlander Association, the command team will still have their part in it, but. At least having that consistency there could help benefit as well.
Yeah, and Spokane is a beautiful place to live.
Yeah.
So it's I think it's one of those little hidden gems that no one ever thinks about.
It is. And once there was two reasons why I moved over there is one is sunshine and two is less traffic.
That is true. When you can get from one end of the city to the other in less than 30 minutes.
Yeah,
usually
there's a lot of construction going on right now. It's not necessarily the 100% the case, but it's still quite nice. I love it there.
Yeah. Any chance going back into state service? I know you worked at DOC for quite a while while you were also as an M-Day guy.
Oh, you know what? That actually brings up the SkillBridge program. Yeah. I did actually get accepted into Spokane County. I don't think I'll end up working for the state, but I also don't know. I do know that. It's hard. Like, one of the hardest things I have right now is trying to figure out what I'm going to do. But I've talked to a lot of other retirees, and they mostly will go through like 3 or 4 different jobs before they find the one. But Spokane County has got a really well-established SkillBridge program because they have been poaching the guys at Fairchild for years. Mm-hmm. And so when I ended up and realistically, they were the only ones to respond to an email. So, you know, going back to like, all right, it was an easy choice to figure out who I was gonna attempt to get accepted into their program. And yes, we did a little interview, and I talked with them, and I have no idea where I'm gonna work at, because I got accepted. My skill bridge isn't gonna start until roughly around February. So they don't know what's going to be open at that point. But I told him, I was like, listen, man, I'll be happy with you in either high-level operations or I'll plow snow. Like, you know, but there's also a large spectrum of, you know, opportunities there. Yeah. So who knows? I might end up working there too. You know.
Yeah.
But, I don't know if I'll definitely tell you what. I'm never going to go back to DOC. No.
Yeah.
I did that for an ungodly amount of time. I ended up working there for almost 10 years.
So you've given us a ton, I would say, of advice kind of for folks that are watching. What would you say to that person who's sitting there watching, who's like, hey, I'm interested in joining the military. Hey, I'm thinking about maybe getting out of the military or aren't even using their benefits. What's that kind of last advice you can give?
So the guys who are in, I'd say don't get out. Don't get out, because I have talked to too many veterans just out in the world, and that there's one constant theme. And that is, they'll always tell me, because, you know, I'm walking around as a first sergeant, and they're like, I wish I did my 20. That is the number one thing that I hear, guys who have gotten out to her. And one of my neighbors, you know, I wish I would have done my 20 is a big theme. So just do it. Get your 20 in, you know, get it, go to an end. Like, at least you know you haven't left anything, untapped. For guys who are getting in, though, the best advice I can give to them is there's no job that will pay your mortgage for you, let you retire in 20 years, and then give you a pension. Actually, I'm not really savvy at the blended program, but it sounds good.
Yeah, I'm not savvy on it either.
Yeah, it's the number one thing that I, because I've actually done a couple of school talks, and I always make the analogy of, like, who would you rather network with? An active duty guy with an active duty unit who they all have the same job, and none of them have any ties anymore because they're all working for the same company. And, you know, they might say they have connections, but they're actually technically severed. Or would you rather network with a company filled with a multitude of different, you know, real careers, guys who are, you know, and I'm not going to downplay it, but guys who are flipping burgers, you know, which is, hey, man, you're starting somewhere. Great. Or to high-level CEOs. I don't remember the kid's name. He was it was in 303 many moons ago. Kid was like a CEO and just wanted to just be told what to do. He didn't want to have to think. So he joined the Guard and was just having a blast as being an E4. Never promoted, didn't want to do it, just did his time, got out, and had a blast. And I was like, man, because that networking ability in the Guard is so much more powerful. And that's one of the biggest benefits that I think I've gotten out of this, my Guard career, is all the connections that I've made. And my network is pretty vast. And I was really hoping, still hasn't happened yet, I was really hoping at least one of these guys would be a billionaire, maybe just one, so I could be their driver. But you
just be
know.
The driver.
Just
want to
just drive them around, you know.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's a joke, but
somebody out there
is a misallocation of an instrument of warfare. But
we don't tell people exactly. Like, oh yeah, my net worth in the Guard.
No, not at all. But either way, I would definitely say you open up with a huge network right off the bat, and that's actually how I ended up at DOC. I was working at Safeway, and I worked at Safeway. That was like my first job, and I just never quit. And the guy got me into DOC. He's like, why don't you just do that? And I was like, you know what? Let me try something new. And he helped me through that whole process. And I obviously have a commitment problem. I just go with it and never quit. So I did that for 10 years, and then I joined AGR after that.
Yeah.
But yeah, networking is one of the big benefits, and obviously you get all the, you know, free college and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Too, so.
Well, I appreciate you coming on, and like we said, if they don't know, you've already kind of said, hey, you plan on retiring, and
yep,
and this
that
was
is
just
true.
I think a good opportunity for you to come on and kind of share your, you know, your wisdom and guidance and just your knowledge on what you've done throughout your career. So
yeah, well, I appreciate you having me, and obviously, I definitely like to hear myself talk. So. that's kind of true.
Well, I appreciate you coming on and sharing it. So if you like the video, give it a like. If you want to know more, throw it in the notes, and we can definitely pass along any questions. Subscribe for future videos. And First Sergeant, we appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thank you. All right, appreciate it.